to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
What's going on, guys? It's Chris again, and I'm here for another week of the NXT review. And let me tell you something, I'm jacked about NXT. Everything they've done this past week. Now, some of it probably relates to a little bit of a mess that we're going to discuss from the Crown Jewel, but more of it is the fact of getting ready for War Games and Survivor Series. I think some of this had to be the plan all along. Others of it was probably added lib just a little bit and made a little bit stronger. And maybe, yeah, because the way I look at it is with War Games being so close to Survivor Series, we're talking about a day before. You're watching all these shows, you're looking at guys who are going against each other in one show, but they're going to team up in another one. And I get it, for camaraderie, for your army, as Triple H put it on SmackDown. But I really do feel that a little bit of this was pushed. If anyone wants to follow me, say anything on, you know, write any comments, say anything on Twitter, you can follow me at the CO place to go, the CO place to go. Same thing on Twitch. Anywhere you're listening to us on here, which is going to be at the underscore WWE underscore podcast, with it's on speaker, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, radio.com. Wherever you listen to us, we appreciate it. This weekend, WWE, you know, it started off with the Crown Jewel, which I didn't get to see. I was working. I did see some highlights. I did do a prediction show. Not a prediction show, but, you know, on the last NXT review, I went over some predictions for Crown Jewel, and I got all of them but one right. The one I got wrong was a tag team turmoil, which sets up the OC, which the OC we're going to talk about a lot later on in the show, but I did miss that one. Other than that, I'm happy with what happened. Was it a fantastic pay-per-view? Not really. From what I heard, some of the stuff doesn't make sense. That was on a Thursday, that was on Halloween, and then you've got your Friday night SmackDown. The NXT invasion happened on Friday, where it was a great idea. I mean, you had Adam Cole versus Daniel Bryan. That alone, if it was just Adam Cole that showed up, I would have been happy. But, you know, Ciampa came out. You had the women's division looked strong. Rhea Ripley came out with Tegan Nox, came out and just destroyed, who was it, Billie Kay, Peyton Royce were, well, no, they weren't there, but they destroyed, who was it, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. You had Peyton Royce and Billie Kay, I believe, were supposed to face, was it a Carmella and Dana Brooke tag team, and you had Bianca Belair beat them up in the back, both, which I don't remember what happened in that. Again, I don't watch SmackDown. I did catch all the highlights due to knowing NXT was going to be on there, because NXT is the show to watch. One more thing about Crown Jewel, the aftermath and that. I mean, I hear that they've extended the events to 2027, I believe. They're also going to do more than one event per year after everything that happened, which, you know, WWE can call it mechanical failure. I would like to look at it more as they were probably held hostage, which can be a very scary thing. If you think about it, you're in the Middle East. You're very, very far away. Like, you know, if you were in New York and you had to get to LA, yeah, it's doable. What are we talking? 5 hour, 6 hour plane flight? But instead, we're in the Middle East. From Saudi Arabia, they had to get to New York. They had to get to Buffalo. So, you know, to be held on a plane to, against your will, in essence, essentially it was against their will. They, you know, got delayed by what? 6 to 10 hours? Some of the talent. I mean, you had Vince that got out. You had Hogan, Lesnar, Heyman. I believe Ric Flair was on the same flight as Hogan, but I don't know that to be 100% certain. What I will say is it was It was a mess, and you do wish the best, but it's like, you know, if you're a talent and you're sitting on that plane, do you go back? Do you want to go back and put yourself into that situation again? Now you're getting paid, you're under contract, I get it. But you got guys like Kevin Owens who refuses to go. Sami Zayn can't go because he's Syrian. You've got, you know, Daniel Bryan who refuses to go, John Cena who's not going. You've got a lot of big name guys, and you know, obviously you do need talent there. You know, they brought in Hogan and Ric Flair to kind of boost up the ratings on this, and I just think that, you know, something's gonna have to be done. There's gotta be some type of silver lining in what happened and an extension of events, and yeah, maybe they got paid more. But for Vince, it, again, being scary, for Vince had an issue with the Crown Prince, that's tough. That is tough. I just wish the best for that. I wish the best for the guys and the women in the back. First ever women's match there, huge, huge for business. I remember watching Sasha Banks wrestle in Dubai. That was a fantastic match, and it was awesome because it was the first one ever in the Middle East, but never in Saudi Arabia, so that was huge. We're going to get off Crown Jewel because that's been talked about enough. But NXT Evasion, we talked about how they went to SmackDown, then they went to Raw. You know, the OC was involved on Raw. The Undisputed Era came out, which leads into tonight. For NXT, there was the OC showed up. So I'm going to go through a birthday real quick. It's Nick Aldis's 33rd birthday. That was today. He's the current NWA champion. I remember him more, I mean, yeah, on the indies in general, but with TNA Impact, he was, I don't know if it was TNA or Impact at the time, but he was known as Magnus or Brutus Magnus, either one. It was the same thing. He's married to Mickie James, who, you know, I didn't know how old Nick Aldis was till I saw this. He's only 33. Mickie James is 40, 7 years a senior. They have a child together. I thought when Mickie James came back to WWE, I thought Mickie would bring in Nick Aldis. She's been back for what, 2 to 3 years, something like that. So he was still young. He's never been in WWE. He definitely has the body type that that Vince likes. Again, he's a current NWA champion. Could it be something that happens down the road? Could be. I mean, you know, WWE signing guys in their 40s now. Late 30s, 40s, when that was always, they went for younger guys, and they tried to make guys who they were. Now that, you know, NXT is the brand of the three, but it's, you know, they're going for guys who are established. I shouldn't even say Vince is going, but you got Triple H who's going for these guys. And Triple H is, you know, he's put his neck on the line for this, for NXT and for his guys. And so I feel like, you know, he's going to do what, as he's always said, you know, best for business when they were doing the authority angle. What's best for business is guys that people know who can work regardless of body type. If you look at the Undisputed Era and put them against even the OC, now AJ Styles isn't very big. But Luke Gallows is gigantic. You put the Undisputed Era against really anybody, any of the tag teams in WWE, they look small, but they're great workers, and it fits what I think people want in wrestling these days. They want to see wrestling. They don't want to see a bunch of talk, 15-minute monologues. No, nobody has time for that anymore. Another thing I wanted to cover real quick before we jump into NXT for the rest of the show is going to be on Dynamite tonight in AEW. That promo that Cody Rhodes did was great. Originally when I saw it, I saw the 6-minute version. I originally saw the 2 and like 2 minute 15 second version, and then I watched the 6-minute version where he kind of talked a little more in depth. And if you have a chance, watch the 6-minute version. A lot of it is talk. It's with Tony Schiavone. It's an interview in the ring. The 2-minute version where it just goes with his promo is very segmented, but you know, it was a very passionate promo. That's what I think is missing. You have guys like Bray Wyatt who do their own promos. Well, for the majority of his promos he does, but you've got that was from the heart. That was like old school storytelling. You know, a lot of people, I was reading real quickly on Twitter and things like that tonight, that they were, you know, kind of comparing that to the Hard Times promo. It wasn't remotely close to that, I don't think, because, you know, you had Dusty, who grew up, you know, son of a plumber, blah, 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 who was talking to Ric Flair and discussing the difference in lifestyle, whereas Cody Rhodes is, you know, built himself up, and Chris Jericho's who he is, but it's just the different, the way he portrayed it was a lot better. It made it more, that would maybe Hard Times current day would be probably a better way to describe that. But regardless whether you think it's, you know, similar to Hard Times or not similar to Hard Times, it was a great promo, and it was exactly what AEW needed in that event. And, you know, that promo alone is going to reach fans who may not even watch AEW. They may, oh, Cody Rhodes, or they may see a promo, or, you know, Dirt Sheet guys, or wrestling reporters, whoever, talking about that promo, and it may be like, you know what, maybe I will turn into that pay-per-view. It's, what, this Saturday, maybe I will watch Full Gear. I will get into something that I may not have already watched, because, you know, it puts Jericho out there, and it puts just the passion out there. So it is something that I think might boost the sales and the viewership for Full Gear in general. Let's get on to NXT. You know, like every week, I talk about what happened in last week's show, just real briefly, just to kind of catch up with what happened. A lot of it relates to, you know, what's going to happen tonight. You know, and then when we do talk about tonight, I'm going to kind of give a match rating based on how I felt about the match. It's everything. And my match ratings may not be the same as yours. It may be completely opposite of yours. But the difference is I'm doing it from how I felt. When I give the rating, it relates to the beginning of the match, to the end of the match. It includes any post-match. It includes any interference. It includes any of that type of stuff. So, you know, a match might only be like a 2-star match, but with what happens after, boosted up to a 3, that's the reason why. You may think that same match is a 4 or 5 based on what happened, but I'm just kind of giving you my approach. But as of last week, we had the Undisputed Era versus Matt Riddle and Keith Lee. So with this, to me, I thought it was kind of an odd tag team now, you know, showing up on SmackDown. You had Keith Lee and Matt Riddle. They look very strong, very, very strong. I thought it was an odd tag team last week because I hadn't seen them work together. Now, maybe they have, but, you know, I hadn't seen them work together in the last 6 weeks. If they have, it's been live events. They had great move sets. Both guys are strong. Matt Riddle is much stronger than I would have assumed he is. I know he's very agile, strikes, but just some of his suplexes and some of his strongholds are absolutely fantastic. Keith Lee, I don't even need to say anything about him. He's amazing. But, you know, when they were out on SmackDown, showed a little more chemistry there. Undisputed Era, obviously, the chemistry is fantastic there. Undisputed Era as a whole, they own all the belts in NXT. So there's nothing you can say about these guys. That was a great match last week. You had Tyler Bate versus Cameron Grimes. Great match. Showcased talent from both guys. Bate dominated that match, but got a distraction from Killian Dane towards the end. Cameron Grimes picked up the win, which that distraction by Killian Dane leads into some stuff we're going to talk tonight. And it was actually the first match of tonight. And then the women's matches last week set up some of the War Games, which tonight they actually finalized, in a sense, the rosters. Shayna Baszler still has one spot. I didn't understand the numbers. I know, you know, traditional War Games, you can go 4-4, similar to Survivor Series, but I thought they would go with 5. I thought that Baszler, with the 2 that she has, it's Baszler, Belair, Io Shirai, and I actually thought that they would have 5 because you have, you know, the other 2, the 4 horsewomen. I just thought they would add those 2, but they're going with 4. So neither one of them was named. Shafir or Duke were not named. Rhea Ripley picked Candice LeRae and Tegan Knox. And so she had one spot left as well. So the premise of tonight's NXT, they were basically saying these women's matches, they're fighting for their right to be in this match. So that was the premise of the women's match. In addition, last week you had the promos by Finn Balor, where he essentially called on anybody, or anybody and everybody, didn't matter whether it was WWE, NXT, the main rosters, or NXT. He said there's too many fans, even in the locker room, who should be sitting in the audience. He essentially said that he's going for Johnny Gargano. So in my estimation, that's who he is going to face at War Games. Now, tonight may show something different. Who knows? Again, with ever since Crown Jewel, WWE as a whole has kind of been all over the place. They've had guys in places they typically aren't. So storylines to me are getting a little bit mixed up. But for tonight's show, you're beginning, like I said, we're going to see a little bit last week, Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest. That was the main event from October 16th show. That was the opening match of tonight's show. In this match, I'm going to be honest with you, Pete Dunne, in my estimation, he dominated this match. Now, you look at their last match, it was great. The guys, you would think that Damian Priest, with as big as he is, would fully dominate the match. It would be a little bit like, you know, Pete Dunne being a little more agile and things like that, but it's almost the opposite. Pete Dunne seemed to be the stronger guy tonight. You know, Damian Priest did get the win on October 16th. Pete Dunne, like I said, pretty much dominated this match. To begin with, he hit him with a flurry of strikes, hit him with a nice enziguri, nice missile dropkick. There were a lot of reversals in this match, reversals for each other's moves. Pete Dunne obviously does the small joint manipulation, where he does a lot of bending of the wrist, stepping on the arms, taking out the limbs, essentially, of anybody he wrestles. But he definitely did that with Damian Priest. Priest hit a huge crucifix powerbomb that I thought could have been the end. It basically is what swung the momentum his direction. He got a pretty close two count on that. So not too long after that, Priest did his classic bow and arrow, which I love. I'm a Tampa Bay Rays fan in baseball, and we had a closer, Fernando Rodney, who I think still plays. I mean, he's probably like 41-ish now. He's old. And he used to do the bow and arrow after every save he would get, so I love that. So Damian Priest goes to do that towards Pete Dunne, which is going to signify his finishing move. Pete Dunne grabs his hand, starts bending the wrist and the hand. Damian Priest, so now the way the match ended on the 16th was Damian Priest and Pete Dunne backed in the corner. The ref, she got caught in between them, so she backs out. Damian Priest low blows Pete Dunne, ends up picking up the win. So in this instance, they go back into the corner. The ref is behind Damian Priest. He goes to low blow Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne blocks it and low blows him himself. As he blocks that, Dunne locks in the armbar for the win, and you got a tie 1-1. So far, this is a great series of matches. You got 1-1, like I said, on the 16th. Damian Priest won. Tonight, Pete Dunne wins, obviously setting up a third match. Pete Dunne celebrating in the ring, and you got Killian Dain who runs down. Now, Killian Dain had a match with, I believe it was Boa. Had a match with Boa, and as he left, Pete Dunne was walking in. This was on the 16th, I believe, and he pointed to him. Pete Dunne did the classic, I'm going to break your fingers, so it snapped, you know, did his little snap. They've been battling ever since. I mean, Pete Dunne has taken out Tyler Bate after the match, Cameron Grimes, Boa. He's taken out pretty much everybody. Every week it's somebody new. And Killian Dain came out to attack Pete Dunne, hit him with a nice Vader bomb. You even had Damian Priest pull off Killian Dain, which did not work in his favor, because as Killian Dain came back over, hit him with a headbutt. After he dispensed of Pete Dunne in the ring, he went outside, threw Damian Priest into the steel steps. As he threw him into the steel steps, he did his little cannonball against him. Damian Priest dead in the corner. You've got what I think is going to set up a nice triple threat match, maybe at War Games, because we do need more than three matches. You're going to have what I'm assuming potentially Pete Dunne, Damian Priest, Killian Dane. That should be a very hard-fought, brutal match. This match, Pete Dunne and Damian Priest, I'm going to give a 3 out of 5. I think it was pretty good, and it did set up a continuation of a feud, which is always good. Now, that's a lot more, like a lot more, than I can say for this next match. The second match tonight was one of those matches where, if it didn't exist on the card, I wouldn't be too worried about it. Now, I said 3 weeks ago, I think it was, there was 7 matches. Last week, there were 6 matches. No, I'm sorry, a month ago, there were 7 matches. Then it was 6 matches. Then it went down to 5 matches last week. This week, we went back up to 6 matches, but Tenara Conti versus Santana Garrett, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. Nothing against them two, but I don't need to see this. Like, this was a match that did absolutely nothing for me. Conti did hit a few good moves. She had a nice overhead belly-to-belly. It was followed by a running knee. Santana Garrett ended up getting some momentum in the match. Hit her with a nice cartwheel handspring back elbow and some strikes. The match was sloppy. I think there were, I don't want to say a lot of botches, but there were some mistimings. They just weren't on the same page with everything. There was another like handspring moonsault type thing. I don't even know what she did. And Conti looked like she rolled not even so much not far enough away, but almost the wrong direction. And it just ended up looking brutal. Conti did get the win. She had some type of kick to the face, which even that move sequence just wasn't good. I'm being very nice here. It's a 1 out of 5. Now, I know that you have all your top women kind of taken up in this War Games title picture, you know, all that. But this was a match that these two maybe should have worked it out on live events, maybe a little bit more than what they did. But it was just brutal. If you watch the show, please skip this episode, or please skip this match. Please focus on everything else that we're talking about. The next match kind of saved the women's division for the night. It was Shayna Baszler versus Dakota Kai. Now, Shayna Baszler, in my estimation, is, I wouldn't call her one of the best champions that NXT has had in terms of the women's division. I mean, you look at Bayley, you look at Sasha Banks, Asuka comes to mind, huge, you know, Paige, huge. But Shayna Baszler is probably the toughest, strongest of the group. Again, a lot of that's pushed since Ronda Rousey, you know, UFC and things like that. But the woman she faced, Dakota Kai, I'm going to tell you something about Dakota Kai. She, in the last 3 weeks, I've learned more about Dakota Kai than I ever knew. Now, I know she was in the Mae Young Classic, and she stood out, and she's friends with Tegan Knox. And, you know, they both are big on, you know, strikes and kicks and things like that. But, you know, I look at it, Shayna Baszler, why does Shayna Baszler have to wrestle? She's a champion. There's not a championship match coming up. They were going into, you know, eventually having who's going to be the number one contender and things like that. But with War Games coming up, that kind of gets pushed to the side. So, you know, Baszler wrestling was huge. I do think you need it, especially after Conti and Garrett. That was just an absolutely brutal match. But Baszler and Dakota Kai. Dakota Kai's a great wrestler. Baszler worked on her knee the majority of the time. Now, when I say she's stronger and faster, that's great. But, you know, a lot of UFC is submission holds. And that's one thing that Shayna Baszler is really, really good at. Her move, I'm probably going to butcher the name here, but the Kira Fuda Clutch. That move is, to me, it's similar to, you know, Samoa Joe's move or Taz's move or, you know, any of these type of, like, reverse, like, rear naked chokehold, things like that. But in this match, it was actually some good offense. I am kind of surprised by Shayna Baszler. Typically, she doesn't do a lot of offense. It's a lot of, like, beating and submission holds. But this match, she did have some good offense. Like I said, she worked Dakota Kai's knee the majority of the match. It was set up to have a submission no matter what. And Dakota Kai wears a brace on one of her knees. She did end up getting some offense in Dakota Kai. She got some nice strikes. She got a really nice headbutt. It looked like a legit headbutt. Nice little roundhouse kick, but at the end of the day, Shayna Baszler's submission holds and intensity were too much for Dakota Kai. She did get her in the Kira Fuda clutch. She did get out. Then she locked it in again, and as Kai was rolling towards the ropes, she was pulling her arm. She was pulling her arm over to grab the ropes, and Baszler kind of hooked her leg through, which basically it was game over at that point. Dakota Kai had to tap out. At the end of this match, there was a big brawl. And, you know, similar to what typically happens in brawls, you know, you figure out what's going on. And obviously you have Rhea Ripley's team versus Shayna Baszler's team. So Ripley was out. And, you know, on Baszler's side, it was Io Shirai and Bianca Belair. And on, you know, Ripley's side, it was Candice LeRae. And Tegan Nox again coming out for her friend Dakota Kai, and then Mia Yim came out. Now Mia Yim came out with a kendo stick, and she lit every single person up. Obviously not the faces here, but she lit everybody up. This match was, to me, not a super strong match, but it was a match that I'm going to give a 3 out of 5 on, just because of the end. It definitely did. That it basically set up Rhea Ripley coming on in a backstage segment saying that we are going to have my fourth person. And you got Dakota Kai standing there. She turns around. She goes, my fourth is going to be Mia Yim. And you could see the pain in Dakota Kai's face. But the heel in me, because if I was anything, I'd be a heel. The heel in me would love to see Dakota Kai join Shayna Baszler as that fourth person, as a nice little kick. But, you know, it's a newer tag team with Tegan Nox. I just don't see them breaking that up. It could be something to spite Rhea Ripley. I think that would be a great, newsworthy situation. But I just don't see them doing that, because then you're taking a face and immediately making her heel. And then you can't bring her back like that. I mean, maybe you can, but I just don't think that's what's best for business. We shall see. I'm assuming next week, Baszler will have who her fourth is. Next match we had was Tony Nese versus Angel Garza. Now, this match was for the number one contendership for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship. Now, there was a match with Jack Gallagher and Angel Garza. And when Angel Garza won, he did the whole discount, double check, I want the title around my waist. And I thought that that might be just a given. I didn't see this match coming when it came. I'm going to be honest. It's nice to see Tony Nese. But Angel Garza is by far, far and away more over than he is. I like Angel Garza's style. To me, I like a lot of Mexican wrestler style. Pentagon and Phoenix take it a little too far with some of the death-defying moves. Eventually, someone's going to break their neck. But Angel Garza kind of has that. He's a high flyer, but he's grounded, if that makes any sense. He's a little bit of comedy too. First thing we're going to talk about in this match was the comedy. The best spot of the night, in my opinion, was Garza's on the top rope and Nese goes for a sunset flip powerbomb. Well, that didn't work. As he falls down, he goes to grab Garza by the pants to pull him down. Classic Angel Garza wearing two pants. He ends up pulling the pants off and Nese actually powerbombs his pants. That was fantastic. It ended up being a pretty good match. There were some nice exchanges. At one point, Garza demanded Nese to chop him, like to keep chopping him, which that was a good little spot. I enjoy stuff like that. Eventually, they made it outside of the ring towards the end. Nese hit a huge DDT on Angel Garza, rolled him back in the ring, hit him with a 450 splash. I thought it was over. It was not. Angel Garza ends up picking up the win with his move. I believe it's called the Wing Clipper. After the match, you got Leo Rush, who's standing up on the stage. I don't want to say he's there to congratulate, because it just didn't seem like Leo Rush to congratulate somebody like that. It would seem like a little more like, you know, cockiness, but he's like, good job, you know, you deserve this, blah, 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 blah. And Leo Rush goes to shake his hand. He gets slapped in the face for it. So that was, you know, that was nice. to see. I'm a Lio Rush fan. Lio Rush versus Angel Garza should be a fantastic match. I'm assuming they would wait for what I would think would maybe be the go-home NXT before War Games. I don't know if this match is deserving of a War Games, you know, slot, because a lot of the best takeovers only have 4 to 5 matches. It's a full 2 hours, and you have to think, if there's 2 War Games matches, that alone is going to be about an hour. So if you have 3 more matches, maybe an hour and 15 minutes. If you have 3 more matches, you're already over that 2 hour point. And that's one thing that NXT stands out about, is they pack in a lot of action and not a lot of, you know, BS in a 2 hour time period. The next match, I don't know how I feel about this match. The Garza and Nice match, I'm going to give it 2 out of 5. Only reason why is, not a huge Tony Nese fan. There were some good spots, but in general, I mean, you can kind of see where this is going. You knew Tony Nese wasn't going to win. So for me, that just really, you know, that kind of took just a little bit away from the match. This next match, again, this got a 2 out of 5. But Isaiah Swerve Scott versus Dominik Dijakovic. Now, if you put these two names against anybody else, well, I don't want to say anybody else, but you put Isaiah Scott against, I don't know, let me just throw somebody out there. We'll say Adam Cole. You put Dijakovic against Matt Riddle, Keith Lee. You put guys like that, and, you know, I'm super excited about this match, and both these names together I'd be super excited about. But there's a huge size difference between the two, and the matches seem odd. You could see where every move was going. Like, you could see when Scott would head towards Dijakovic, you could almost tell if it was going to be reversed or not. And the issue with that is these two guys' styles just did not work well together, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe they didn't have a lot of practice with each other. I know Dijakovic has been facing Lee in almost every single live event and house show for them, but their styles didn't work well. Now, that being said, there was a ton of offense in this. These guys threw the house at each other. I mean, mainly Isaiah Scott took it to Dijakovic. A couple big moves back-to-back. You had Dijakovic, who was holding on to Isaiah Scott's face, laughing at him, trash-talking him. It was a good little spot, and right after that, you had Isaiah Scott hit this, what he calls the Poison Rana. So it's like a Hurricanrana, but reverse. So, you know, the guy goes backwards. The guy who's getting the move done to him. So that was Dijakovic, went backwards. And then he rolled out to the outside on the apron and got a huge double stomp from Isaiah Scott. Now, that move combo, honestly, was probably the best combo of the match, where it's like anything could happen, and it's like you knew one was going to hit and the other one, but the reversal into the Poison Rana was fantastic. Dijakovic ends up getting the win, but the whole time, to me, the match felt just a little bit off. Again, both guys solo, fantastic. Both guys facing other guys, fantastic. These two just, for some reason, did not work out well together. And then we're going to get on to our main event. Yeah, the OC versus Ciampa, Lee, and Riddle. So this match, and, you know, I'm going to talk about what happened after when I talk about the promos, but this main event was teased from the onset. You had the OC show up. They beat up the Undisputed Era. They came out to the ring, and they basically said that, you know, we are here to, you know, we're going to bring it to NXT, and we're going to take over. NXT took it to WWE. OC was here to take it back. Tommaso Ciampa comes out and welcomed them to the main roster, which I thought was fantastic. It's fitting, because it is. The OC asked if he's going to fight alone, and they basically said that, you know, looks like you're the only one with the balls big enough to come out here. He turns around. He sees Matt Riddle and Keith Lee. They are there, and Ciampa says, let's fight. And Styles says, they're on. So that led us to our main event. Styles, right at the beginning, hit a quick dropkick on Ciampa and hit a phenomenal forearm to Matt Riddle. You obviously knew it was one of those things where you're going to get some quick offense in, but that's definitely not going to end the match. Styles, Lee, and Riddle. I'm not taking anything away from Ciampa, Gallows, or Henderson, but those three in particular, they look great. The moves that Matt Riddle did and put in succession after he got his hot tag, he, you know, a ton of strikes, kicks, his suplex combos. At one point, he did a double exploder. I believe it was Styles and Anderson, if I'm not mistaken, because he knocked out a Gallows out of the ring right after his hot tag. It was, you know, Matt Riddle week to week ceases to... He basically shows that he's been talking a lot of crap to Brock Lesnar online. I don't see why they don't put him with him. Not yet. Don't do it now. Give me like 9 months. Give me like next SummerSlam. You know, something like that where, you know, it's almost a year. Give it some time. Give it some build. Matt Riddle deserves that main roster spot. Hate to see him leave NXT. I hate to see any of these guys leave NXT. I want to see guys come back. I want to see Cesaro come back. Please bring me Cesaro. Cesaro versus Matt Riddle. Are you kidding me? That match would be fantastic. So we talked about Matt Riddle. Now, Keith Lee, there were two things that he did that were absolutely phenomenal. There was a clothesline on Carl Anderson that he hit him so hard that he actually fell as well. And then he hit a pounce on AJ Styles that actually knocked him into the ref. And I'm glad to see the pounce come back. One guy I used to like back in the day was Monty Brown. Came to WWE, just was bad. He was nothing like he was in TNA. But the pounce is such a good move for a big guy like that. It's fantastic. We're going to jump to the end. There was a ton of back and forth. Ciampa ends up with, it's just him and Styles in the ring. He's getting ready to finish Styles. And Finn Balor's music comes on. Finn Balor walks out. Ciampa looks like he's seen a ghost. Doesn't get in the ring. He goes over to Matt Riddle and hits him with the 1916 DDT on the outside. Fantastic DDT, especially being on the outside. It's a straight face to the ground. Right before that happened, AJ Styles in the ring hit Ciampa with a Pele kick. So AJ Styles sits there and he smirks at Finn Balor. Now he goes to stand up and he does the double-handed two-sweet above the head. Finn Balor hits him with the Bullet Club finger guns. As Styles turns around, he turns around, it's almost like, oh, wait, there's still a match going on. I don't know what's happening. He turns around, gets ready to set up Ciampa for the Styles clash, and Adam Cole runs in and hits him with a massive super kick. Massive super kick. Like, it was, he had Ciampa up for the Styles clash, and that super kick was, there's no putting your hand up or anything like that. It was nice. No winner was announced. Obviously, the ref was dead, and the match fell apart. The match rating for me on this one was a 4 out of 5. A lot of it related to the end. There were some great spots in this. There were some guys who were definitely showcased, but the end, just setting up war games and things like that, for me was pretty important. Now, that being said, in the war games, Regal announced tonight after this that it was going to be Ciampa, Riddle, Lee, and one other person versus the Undisputed Era at War Games. We already know the War Games match with Baszler, Belair, Shirai, and somebody versus Ripley, Candice LeRae, Tegan Nox, and Mia Yim. Does Dakota Kai side with Baszler? Who knows? I think another match that's going to happen and be made official will be Balor and Gargano. And then after tonight, you know, I thought it might be Pete Dunne versus Killian Dane. But after tonight, I could see that being a triple threat match with Damian Priest. That gives you 4 good matches. I think they add one more. Could be the NXT Cruiserweight Championship. Who knows? But that is something that is possible. Next week, it was announced as well that you had Angel Garza versus Leo Rush for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship. I see something that leads this feud to continue and not be so rushed as it is. You also have Io Shirai versus Mia Yim in a ladder match. Those matches... our next week, the Io Shirai versus Mia Yim, that's going to end up being a mess. I think after that match, we'll find out who the fourth is. Like I said, I really think it could be Dakota Kai. Tonight, what stood out match-wise, Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest continues on a feud. Great rematch. Sets up a third between them as well. Again, what stands out, Isaiah Scott versus Dijakovic, but for the wrong reasons. I love the match. I love the moves, but I don't like them paired together. So the fact that, you know, each guy got to do their moves and kind of do what suits them best, I thought was awesome. And then, of course, you got the OC versus Ciampa, Lee and Riddle. You can't go wrong with something like that. Overall, NXT tonight was really good. If you can skip that second match, though, that would be the one to do. So that's going to be it for tonight, guys. If you please feel free to reach out. It's at the CO Place to Go with any questions, comments. I'd love to talk about it if you do have anything to say. And I just, again, want to say I appreciate you listening, and we'll be talking to you next week.